Now, question number 29549, Mr. John McGough, Real 10. Now, we're talking about the sort of things you were doing. What are the, I mean, did you do patrols around the local area or just around the perimeter?
My particular, I was always patrolling around the perimeter. I didn't go outside the perimeter except in the case I mentioned about the Palestine police.
Different people were assigned to different roles.
Different roles, yes.
Now, well, there's a couple. What about the business about the illegal immigrants and the wireless space, direction finding stations?
Yes,
were you involved in that?
Yes, I was involved in that. That was another aspect of our security duties. I think I had about three radio direction finding systems set up on the coast. Tracking illegal immigrants, and of course, the Jewish freedom fighters or terrorists, whatever you like to call them, knew about these, and they were a prime target. If they could have put them out of action, they would have done. So we used to mount guard on them, and I've still got in my memoirs, my bits and pieces. I've got a guard report, which I mounted, the names of the guards, myself, officer in charge. Guarding the radio direction finding installations.
Has anything ever happened there? I presume not.
No, nothing happened there, no. No. And I mentioned earlier on there was a lack of flying duties, but we did do one particular flight which I'd like to talk about.
Did that come after the time when the two lads were found hanged in an orange grove, or before?
I think that was before.
Right. Tell us about this flight then.
Well,
that's on May the 5th, 1946, I think. Is that right?
Yes, that's about the date. We were briefed about the fact that some of us were going to fly down to Khartoum, and I was lucky to be one of the crew picked. And we sent, because the Sudanese where after their independence, like a lot of other places under British control, and the powers that be decided to show the flag, so they decided to send the gliderborne and parachute force down to Khartoum to show that we're able to react to any threats to the sovereignty of the state at the time. So three gliders went down, And a number of, can't remember how many Halifaxes carrying parachute troops. And our first leg was from RAF Castina across the Sinai Peninsula, pick up the River Nile, flew south along the Nile and landed at Wadi Halfa on the border of Egypt and the Sudan. That took us approximately 5 hours. And as we crossed the Sinai Peninsula, it really was a rough flight because it's a mountainous area and the air currents are coming up, bumping us all over the place. But we landed all right at Wadi Halfa, stayed the night in a Wadi Halfa in a hotel in Wadi Halfa. Next morning we took off again from Wadi Halfa airstrip and flew down to Khartoum. That took about another 5 to 5.5 hours. And when we got to Khartoum, all the military VIPs in the area were there to watch the gliders landing and the parachute troops jumping. And there was a triangular area marked out in the airfield, and the gliders, we had to land in that area to show that we could do a precision landing, and fortunately it went off very well. But the parachute troops weren't so fortunate because it was a high wind and quite a few of them were injured in jumping. Under normal condition, I don't think they would have jumped, but seeing it was a special occasion, they decided to carry on jumping, and quite a few of them got injured.
Now, what happened when you got there?
When we got there, the glider pilots, were exempted from all military duties. And the other two, I don't know what the other soldiers that we took, what they did. So we had 2 or 3 days sightseeing in Khartoum.
Now, what do you remember? What do you think of Khartoum?
Oh, we thought it was absolutely marvellous to see different people, different dark-skinned people, and to see the Nile and the city of Khartoum and the Nile, and the site of the Battle of Omdurman, where Kitchener was all those years ago. And a particular interest in that because one of the first regiments to leave, who went to Omdurman after Kitchener was killed, was the Essex Regiment. And of course, I was a member of the Essex Regiment before I joined the Glider Pilot Regiment. And they went by boat up the Nile. And I couldn't help thinking how different their mode of transfer was to mine. It was like flying in a glider, got down from Egypt in 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours, and took them 2 or 3 weeks to do the same journey, being pulled along the canal, the River Nile in boat. Couldn't help but making a comparison how times change.
So, anything else happened while you were there? Found it very hot?
Found it very, very hot. And I also remember we decided to go to a barber's and have a shave. We just thought we'd see what it was like. And I think this barber must have been very anti-British because he almost cut my face to pieces, nicked my face all over. And I barely thought to myself, well, here's my chance to do something anti-British. But apart from that, we were just sightseeing. And some of my colleagues went on the boat on the River Nile, but I didn't. And then after a couple of days, we flew back again. And that's when, on the way back home, one of the gliders had a forced landing in the desert because the tug aircraft which was towing us, one of his engines overheated. So they had to release the glider in the desert. And they landed in the desert. And we circled around them. And the navigator from the plane who dropped them sent their position to headquarters in Palestine. And we carried on back to Wadi Halfa and then back to Palestine. And that was the end of our journey. And I think the crew were released a day or two afterwards. Were rescued a day or two afterwards from the desert.
Now, one thing is that was your last flight, wasn't it?
Yes, that was my last flight, yes.
Did you realise it? Did you miss it?
I didn't realise at the time. But when I think back now, it was a nice way to end on something which nobody else, only 3 glider crews have done. I was one of the 3 glider pilots. One of the 3 pilots in the gliders which flew down to Khartoum. Nobody else had ever done it before, and nobody else will ever do it again.
Did the security situation get worse when you were back in Palestine?
Yes, it got worse when we got back, because the government had the military had executed, I think it was 3 or 4 insurgents in Acre Jail in Palestine, executed them, and sometime afterwards, 2 British sergeants, not from our regiment, were abducted and found hanged in the Orange Grove as a retaliation for what had happened to the insurgents who were hanged.
Now, how could you tell things were getting worse? Was it worse on the ground?
Yes, it was worse. And I mean, I know it was just shortly after I left Palestine, they blew up the King David Hotel and killed, I don't know, 50 or 60 British soldiers. But that was before my time.
Now, you nearly killed someone as well. It was a bit of an accident with a Sten gun. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Sten gun was notorious for being a very, very dangerous weapon. And we're marching in Indian file, and a chap named Ward from Catford in London, one of my colleagues in front of me, and I tripped as I walked behind him, and the Sten gun fired itself, which is very possible. If you didn't handle it carefully, it'd fire. And I just put about 4 or 5 bullets just at the back of his head, and never hurt him. But I'll never forget him. He was as cool as a cucumber. He never even jumped. And if it had been me the other way around, I think I wouldn't have been very pleased. But I'm glad I didn't hurt him. But it just proved the fact that we'd always been told, be careful of the Sten gun, because they were cheap. effective, but not very safe.
Now, how did you get on with the local Jewish and Arab population? Did you have much contact with them?
Oh yes, we got the Arabs worked on the airfield, and they were all right. We got on quite well with them, and the Jewish. When we went into Tel Aviv or went to any main town, all the Jewish restaurateurs were out asking us to come in and try the food. And we got no real animosity from them. And the Jewish women would have nothing to do, they just looked through you. They didn't want to know us. But we never suffered. You knew that you weren't welcome. At the same time, there was no physical violence visited upon you, but there was always a chance it might do.
Did you get any leave to go to any of the tourist sites, like in Jerusalem or Bethlehem or anything like that? Or was that just not possible in the security?
No, one day we went on a small exercise and went in tents. Two men tents to Nazareth, near Nazareth. And the next day after we arrived there, the officer said to us, we've got a little exercise for you. So they gave us a compass course, just a compass course, and it says this should take us so many hours. And we set the compass course from where we were at Nazareth, and we ended up at Jaffa, marching across country. It took us quite a few hours, so we marched on just in the compass course. I think it was Jaffa we went to. We ended up in Jaffa. And I've got a picture of myself and my colleague having reached Jaffa, having an orange juice from a Jewish vendor who had a stall by the road. I was very, very welcome. And that briefly covers most of my time in Palestine.
No other particular stories you remember?
No, not at the moment, no. Oh yes, one other thing may seem insignificant. What is the name of the chameleon that the lizard that changes its colours? We had a pet chameleon in our barrack room in one of the domes we were in. And it used to, we were fascinated by the way it came to a different colour section, or it changed colour. And we liked that little pet. It was well looked after and well fed anyway.
Did you have a sort of a canteen or a bar or anything, you know, for you to drink inside the camp?
Yes, because the camps were based on normal RAF stations, and you got a sergeant's mess, an officer's mess, and as if you were at home, so you could get access to drinks if you wanted and recreation.
Did you drink much?
No, I was never was a drinker. Never was a drinker. But I did have my moments, like, of course, we all young men, a bit of bravado, and you learned your lesson.
How would you spend your time then? I mean, it's a lot of time sitting around doing nothing.
Well, we used to have people who could, we used to have discussions, like people who could discuss, did Bacon write Shakespeare's plays, and people would talk about something else, various little interludes like that we did.
So what happens next then?
Next it came my turn to be discharged from the army. My demob number came up, and I started on the route from Palestine on my way home.
Now when was that? You demobilised 13th of October. So I presume you'd start back in September.
In September, yes.
What do you remember the trip back? August 46.
August 46. We went by sea from, I think it was Tel Aviv. See, to Toulon in southern France. And in Toulon, we disembarked from the ship and we stayed there 3 or 4 days while they were organising more transport for us. We got a chance to see the Toulon, its environs, and all the little surrounding towns. So we enjoyed that, something new to see. After about 3 or 4 days, we entrained. I went by train from Toulon to the Channel Coast overnight. From the Channel Coast to ferry to Dover, and then back from there by road to Aldershot, where I was demobbed.
And what was the demobilisation process? You were demobilised 13th of October, 1940.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that? What did they do? What did you get?
Well, you handed in, you got a civilian suit, an overcoat, a trilby, and they fitted you out with a suit there, a civilian suit, and they give you discharge papers, and that was it. And the train went to wherever you lived in the British Isles. So that's all I remember. Being fitted out for this suit, doing all the paperwork, signing bits of paper, and getting a railway one to go home to Smethwick.
Now, what were you going to do? You know, when you come, because you've been in the army a fair while. You joined 41, started 41. What were you going to do?
I hadn't got a clue.
Did you have a job waiting for you?
No. I had nothing at all.
You'd just been a labourer, hadn't you? The plastic job.
I had no job waiting for me. And I hadn't got a clue what I was going to do, because I'd been in the army for quite a while, nearly 6 years. And I more or less come straight from school, more or less, into the army. And then it was a very depressing period for me, wondering what I was going to do, because after a while being on leave, you begin to get bored and think, well, there's more in life than just hanging around. So my whole life changed by a remark from a friend of mine who said, oh, he said, John, they're recruiting firemen. I'd never even dreamed of the fire station. He said, there's a notice on the fire station door in Rolf Street in Smethwick. So I went down and I thought, well, this is not bad. So I enlisted in the fire brigade. I remember the acceptance trial. About a hundred of us met at Central Fire Station in Birmingham for tests and evaluation, educational tests. And one of the tests was on the turntable ladder. You had to stand on the turntable ladder and they put you up in the air without any support, because you could rise to 100, 150 feet, and some people didn't like that. So you had various physical tests, carrying your body, getting through obstacles, etc. So I managed to pass that. And very few, strangely enough, passed it. Only about 10 or 15 of us from the 100 who were there. And that's when I started in the fire service, which lasted about 30 years.
Now, would your ex-military experience have value to you, do you think, in the fire brigade?
Oh, yes. As well, and when I joined my first fire station after my training, all the men there were all ex-servicemen, all used to discipline, and all. And it was interesting though to talk to men who'd been in the submarine service, some in the RAF and some in the army, some in the navy. And we're all so that we're good firemen. From the start, and that we were disciplined and organised and knew what to do in an emergency.
Now, it was a successful career, wasn't it? Just sketch it out for us. We don't do much about it, but what?
Well, my first posting was to Rolf Street in Smethwick in 1947, and that was to the National Fire Service, because during the war the government had nationalised the fire service. And there was I spent a year in the National Fire Service. Then in early 1948, fire brigades returned to local control, and I was a member of Smethwick Fire Brigade. I spent 11 years in Smethwick Fire Brigade, reaching the rank of sub-officer. And I saw a job advertised for a station officer in Wigan Fire Brigade. So having discussed with my wife, I decided I'd see if I could get that job in Wigan, and just wanted a change. So I went to Wigan, I got accepted. I was appointed station officer in Wigan Fire Brigade. We moved to Wigan, I stayed with them for 5 or 6 years, and then there was a job going in Cheshire Fire Brigade. So I moved from Wigan to Cheshire Fire Brigade, and eventually ended up as an assistant divisional officer in Cheshire Fire Brigade.
Jeez, good progress.
Good, fairly good progress, yes.
Now, did you have any after effects of your war service, mental or physical, from either your time as a glider pilot or as your time as a POW?
Yeah, yes, I did. When I was in the fire service, I met my wife when I was just before I joined the fire service, and she'd never seen me in uniform. They always used to tell her, "You didn't marry me for the uniform or the glider pilot's wing, because you never saw me in uniform." But I'm lucky that she stuck with me, because for about a year or 18 months, I suffered depression. I was depressed. I think now it may have been a slight case of post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm sure it was, but I was very depressed. And normally when you're 14, you're on your best behavior, and you're not miserable, but I was for quite a while. But thank God I got over it.
After you helped at all? Or did you
get no, help? Got over it myself. But I realize now, looking back, I should have really had to get something done about it. Now, what caused it, I don't know.
And how long did it last for?
About a year, 18 months.
And then it faded away. Did it ever recur? Or?
Never had a sin. But as I said, I was lucky that my wife stuck by me.
And what about physical effects? You know, did they last long? You mentioned you had a few. Anything you put down to the POW?
No, nothing at all. And from joining the fire service, I don't think for 30 years, I don't think I ever saw a doctor that was fit.
And are you a member of any associations, you know? I think you're in the Aircrew Association.
Yeah, I'm a member of the North East Cheshire Aircrew Association, and of course the Glider Pilot Regimental Association.
What does the Aircrew Association do for you? We'll do that one first.
The Aircrew Association, as the name implies, are people who served as aircrew, be the military aircrew like I was, or RAF aircrew. And they have talks, discussions, and get-togethers, lunches, just to keep the comradeship of the service going.
Is it important to you, or do you know?
Well, it isn't, not lately, because physically I'm not able to get, since I've stopped driving, I'm not able to get around and attend as many functions as I would like to. But we're all in our late 70s or 80s now, and of course the attendance is falling off as people get ill and they lose their physical ability to attend meetings.
What about the Glider Pilot Regiment Association? What does that do? Is there a local branch or what
happens there? Yes, I was in the there's a branch all over the country. I was in the Manchester branch, and there was about 20 of us ex-glider pilots in the Manchester branch, and we met for lunches, pub lunches, and talks, and get-togethers.
So very similar. Is that still going, or?
It's just died a death due to the age of the people.
Right, now, finally, and as a last word, you want to recite your poem, Memories, which you feel sums up how you felt.
Well, I wrote this poem in 1989. Very often in my quiet times, silent whispers in my mind say, slip the bounds of present time. Return once more to days of yore, when youth and the skies were yours. I need no will to resist the call, to days when comradeship was all. Care and trouble were stranger still, and on lion's wings a sword on high, to silently wander the welcoming sky.
Thank you very much.
Lion's wings is of course the lion with blue wings. That's the guy, the pilot, Brevi.
Thank you very much.